by mutos, dregs, primords, Field Major Styre of the Sontaran Empire, and the bandaged-faced traffic warden from Threads. You shelter below ground, waiting for rad levels to drop to safe levels, alone, with nothing more than minimal food rations. And somewhat improbably, 5 stories from the Doctor Who universe in any medium. TV, audio, film, novel, comic book. These artifacts, though we are only linked to the past, maybe for the rest of your life. Welcome to The Bunker, a Doctor Who podcast from Cutaway Comics, brought to you by Bamalan Productions. And now, here's your host, Ian Winterton.
Shivering in the dark as he contemplates the lonely years ahead this week is Kenny Smith. Well known to Doctor Who fandom, Glasgow resident Kenny's the editor of Big Finish's Vortex magazine, as well as a regular writer on Doctor Who matters for the Scottish Daily Record and the Daily Mirror. In addition, he hosts 2 podcasts, The Power of Three and The Pieces of Eighth, the latter dedicated to all things Paul McGann. Kenny, hello. So how off-beam was
hello.
That?
Hello. That was actually 100% accurate. Although that's I haven't good. Done stuff for the Mirror and the Record in a few years because I don't work for that publishing company anymore. But it was accurate to 2015.
Oh, I see. Well, that's fairly up to date for TARDIS Wiki, in my experience. But yeah, I'm still only, I've done a few other things Doctor Who related, but I'm still only the person who script edited Robots of Death stage play over 10 years ago. Ooh. That's all I did. TARDIS Wiki is funny as well because they're always in the past tense. So it's literally, is that just so they don't have to bother changing it when people have died?
Yeah,
every entry is in the past tense. It's very strange.
Yeah, I think I am still alive. I'm just checking my poll. It seems to be working. Yeah. Just the one, of course. Not like Time and the Rani with the 2 hearts.
So instead of diving in, I'm having a Big Finish couple of days. I was just in the studio yesterday recording a Big Finish, my first script, which was pretty amazing. And then earlier today, I interviewed Emma Reeves.
Oh, yes.
Which is the lovely Emma Reeves. And now I'm interviewing another Big Finish alum, Kenny.
You're interviewing an interviewer technically here. So it's getting a bit meta here.
I know somebody else is like Joe Ford or somebody's going to pop up in the next one and interview us both simultaneously. So instead of going straight back to your childhood, you are very much known for Big Finish. How did Big Finish come into your life? I mean, obviously, probably, I imagine through listening to the CDs.
Pretty much so, yeah. I mean, I'd always followed the spin-off media. I've got all the new adventures. I've got all the missing adventures. I've got all the EDAs. So following sort of expanded universe Doctor Who, or Hooniverse, I suppose we should technically call it now. That's always something that I've done. So, you know, I've got carefully preserved in my loft in a nice watertight box, Sovilacin, Lung Barrel, The Well-Mannered War, The Dying Days, all these hard-to-get books. The Room with No Doors, I suppose, goes in there as well. So, yeah, I've got all these
books. I used to own those, and I put them to the charity shop like a twat.
If only you put them on eBay, you might have had a few more £100 in your bank.
I know. Well, I generously said charity 25 years ago.
Excellent. But, yeah. I bought, because I saw DWM announcement saying that Big Finish had got the license to do Benny. I'd bought all the Benny books. Carried on from Oh No It Isn't through to the end, and had all of those. So when they said that Big Finish was going to do audio versions of the Benny plays, I was very excited, and got an order in for Oh No It Isn't at my Forbidden Planet in Glasgow, and got it from there. Kept buying them, loved them, and you know, very quickly, because I mean, something that throughout my youth, my dad had always been a keen talking book and radio play listener. So it was something that I'd sort of carried on with. I've always enjoyed listening to things. For it was stuff like the Just So stories read by Johnny Morris, not Johnny Morris, the big Finnish writer, of course, that'd be interesting, but Johnny Morris, the TV presenter.
Yes.
And people like that. There was another writer, and I can't remember who it was, another reader, sorry. But anyway, so yeah, loved the audiobooks. And then, of course, when they announced they'd got the license to do the Doctor Who stuff, I was over the moon. So, yep, got my pre-order in and ordered from the Big Finish website, and you know, all excited. So when my Sirens of Time came through, oh, brilliant, loved it, and got subscriptions in. So I was taking out 12-month subscriptions at a time, although I only took out a 12-month subscription after The Fearmonger, because I ordered it on the website, didn't get an acknowledgement to say that I didn't have it, to say that I'd ordered it, and then ordered it again. So I got two copies. And then I think Big Finish changed it, so you got a receipt after ordering online after that. So I did swap my extra Fearmonger and for another release. And then, no, it was Marion Conspiracy was where I became a subscriber. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. So you were a very early adopter. I mean, the story of Big Finish is somebody should write a book about it one day, because it really is like, you know, purely born of fandom in the best sense of the word. And
if only somebody would, Ian, if only somebody would, or indeed if only somebody had.
Have they? Who could that be?
Well, there's a rather good volume about it. Volume 2, The Big Finish Companion, which I believe is actually now sold out, but I'm sure if you shopped around online, you might find a copy at a reasonable price.
Yes, yes. But it is a strange odd story. Knowing Gary Russell now, through Cutaway and everything, it really is like out of the wild west of IP and indifference from the BBC. Something amazing was born. Yeah. And now we're right up to date with Disney, who have a slightly different approach to IP. But we shall see what happens in the next few years. So I thought I'd start with your first choice was The Wonderful Storm Warning, which I've just finished re-listening to. And I think, damn you, I think I'm probably going to start on a massive re-listen of the Charlie Pollard years. Because it's been a long time since I listened to them. There's so much Big Finish, but as I was saying to Emma Reeves earlier, there's so much Big Finish, but the one thing I haven't missed an episode of is Eighth Doctor. And I think that's because, well, as you probably feel yourself being being a bit of a fan of McGann, it does really fill that gap that we never got him on the screen. But he's genuinely one of my favourite Doctors, based on the audio output, which is just amazing. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd I love the TV movie. I queued up to get it at a midnight opening at HMV in Edinburgh back on the 22nd of May 1996, and then went to watch it in the pub in Edinburgh with some friends on the 27th of May. So I know all these dates. They're just sort of ingrained in me. I'm rather good with dates and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
because the VHS came out the day before the broadcast, didn't it?
5 days before it was Tuesday night into the Wednesday before it was broadcast on the Monday bank holiday. So
yeah,
I remember far too well. I took a day off work so I could watch it and sort of be slightly hungover the next day and then make my way home. But yes, I've been Storm Warning is just an incredible story for me. It's very much like an audio movie from the word go.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems that, well, everything Big Finish had done to that point had been really, really good. With Storm Warning, it just seemed to go up a gear because it's New Who. It was our ongoing series for a great number of years. And just what it does, it just sort of gives us new Doctor Who. There's no bounds on it. Obviously, you can't kill off the Doctor at that point, but anything could happen with the companions. And it kicks off an amazing run. I mean, it gets so much energy and pace. It's got the human drama, you know, a lot of things. You can see why, you know, with the creation of Charlie Pollard, Russell T. later emailed Andrea Fisher just to say there would be no Rose Tyler without Charlie Pollard, which is, it's a great insight. And it just shows you how important the companion had become in that they were no longer just the person who was there to ask questions. Obviously, we've seen that with Ace on TV. The fact that she'd had depth and the fact that she'd come from a single parent family and things like that, which is completely different for Doctor Who in the late 80s, considering everything had been so middle class And all of a sudden, you've got a girl from a council estate, single parent home, had a difficult relationship with her mum. And it's all of a sudden, it's like, wow, this is like people I know. Whereas it's quite hard to relate to somebody like Adric, because although I may have known some people who were very clever, but none of them wore space pajamas all the time and were that brilliant at maths. But it's, but I do like Adric, I should say, but I'm just, I just, there's just something about Ace really set the tone. And then Charlie came along and played with such vigor and energy and passion by India, who's just, she's just, you can, the fact that you can almost picture her looking like an anime character half the time, just sort of going shocked, you know, with an open mouth and exclamation marks or question marks popping out around her head.
Yeah.
And she just does everything that's going on around her.
Just listening to it today, it's powers of audio drama is if you get it right, it ages even less than TV. And this just it sounds so fresh. There's maybe some over monologuing from the Doctor, because I know writing for Big Finish now they've refined everything, so you don't have quite so much. You're not supposed to have the Doctor or the Master, whoever, walking around the console talking quite as much. But other than that, it's so fresh and so energetic. And like you say, India Fisher is just burst in there, and it's brilliant that they made her. They didn't just go make her an ace. They sort of made her ace, but from, you know, but born in 1912. So she's very much a different and unusual person than that brilliant storyline, which, I mean, in a way, even though it's old because it's Big Finish, a lot of people might not have listened to Big Finish, and they are all available on Spotify or for $2.99, which is
at bigfinish.com.
Yeah, which is just, I mean, it is. I've spent quite a lot of money on the $2.99s doing this podcast, because people sort of suggest their favorite Big Finish, and I'm like, oh, I haven't got that one. Oh, $2.99 for like something amazing. I'm going to listen to a million.
Yeah, absolutely. As what you can see, but the people at home can't see at the moment, I'm reaching across my office right now, and I'm getting something out my cupboard, or I'm just reaching into my cupboard. Hang on a wee second.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Right, I have something here.
Is that a CD?
It's not a CD. No, it's not. Because in my day job at the time, when this came out, I was working as a journalist on a local weekly newspaper. And I had a background in fanzines. That was something that I did when I was a student, sort of, you know, hone writing skills, you know, learn to do things and how things should be done, how they shouldn't be done. And absolutely loved, because I wanted to know more about these stories. I was just so excited by not just Storm Warning, but the stories that followed it with Sword of Orion, The Stones of Venice, and Minuet in Hell. And I wanted to know more about these things and how they were made, because DWM had done a lovely feature on some of them and did an interview with India, but didn't quite tick all the boxes that I wanted. So because I'm a journalist and I'm absolutely fearless when it comes to going for interviews, I got in touch with Gary, who I've known Gary since 1992, and said, I quite fancy doing a fanzine to celebrate this first run of McGann's. And he said, yep, no worries. And so he put me in touch with people like Nick, and I tracked down an Alistair Locke, and I tracked who'd done the music, I should say. And I did a bit of trolling online and was able to find out that Paul Mars was at the University of East Anglia at that time. So I was able to work out the email format. I got in touch with him. I found Alan W. Lear by looking through a phone book for Edinburgh and got his number that way. There was a couple of Alan Lears, and I eventually found this one. And as a result, got all these interviews, spoke with Indy as well, went through her agent, got in touch with her, and became friends very, very quickly, because I'm just 3 months older than her, and all our sort of references are exactly the same, our musical, cultural, the lot, and which was great. So did that. I even had Michael Sheard's number, because a friend had interviewed him, and got in touch with him and got an interview with him. And the result was this thing I'm holding here, the McGannzine, was a fanzine. It's a 40-page zine with all new exclusive interviews. And on the back cover, there's Clayton Hickman, who'd done the covers.
Yeah.
got a couple of roughs. These are the only versions. I've got them in colour. I've got colour printouts. And these are the only versions that exist anywhere in the world of these, as Clay doesn't have them. So there's a demon that wasn't used for Minuet in Hell. And there's like the original cover sketch for four images that would have interlinked to make the covers work. So that sort of kick-started me, because I'd love Big Finish, but this sort of pushed me into the I need to know more territory.
Yeah.
And really sort of that's where my sort of, I suppose it'd be fair to say I became a super fan with from that moment onwards.
Yeah.
I did a follow-up issue which was looking at the other ones. So the zine changed to the finished product. It couldn't be the McGann zine since it wasn't just McGann stuff. Did that second issue, and then I got a girlfriend and she moved in, and so that sort of stuff went out the way. Then, you know, got engaged, got married, had a daughter, and sort of went in the back burner. So my Big Finish listening continued. I mean, I remember, God, 20 years ago this month, checking the post every day, or phoning home to say, has it come yet? Waiting in grace, coming through the post in those pre-download days. I was phoning home literally to, is it coming in yet? Jen's, no. Is it in there next day? No. And then eventually she phoned me to say, your thing's here, in the white padded envelope. She knew exactly what it was. So, so excited. And so, yeah, I, you know, that's just sort of my levels of devotion and fandom. But then finished product came back in after the first Lucy Miller series was released, because I got really excited because I've always been a big Sheridan Smith fan. And to have Sheridan Smith and Doctor Who together, and especially the Ninth Doctor, win. And it was a just that really kick-started it. So I did another issue looking at the first run of Lucy's, and then just kept going, went back and filled in, you know, sort of the stories that I hadn't done. I got, you know, issues of Nye Davros and Sarah Jane Smith series two, trying not to cover stuff that had been done in the likes of Ben Cook's Big Finish Inside Story, so I'm trying to do different things. And it just sort of rolled from there. And it's all because Storm Warning got me so excited. And then when I was asked to do the earlier mentioned Big Finish Companion 2 by David Richardson, because I'd been obviously speaking about Companion Chronicles and stuff, and they saw what I was doing because I'd always send them copies. And then they asked me to do that. And then when we tragically lost Paul Spragg, I said to Nick, look, if I can help out for a month to get the next Vortex out, I'll do it for a month for you till you find somebody to do it. And Nick said, well, actually, we've had a word. We know that you and Paul were friendly and we'd like you to carry it on for us. So I've been doing that ever since. And genuinely, every month when I open the folder, I always think of Paul every single time. Look at what I've got and think of a really, really bad headline, something punningly awful that would make him go, oh. Because Paul's the king of puns, and I do try to live up to his standards, but no, he's irreplaceable. I can only attempt to be a pale shadow of what he did. But
yeah, no, I never miss him, but everyone speaks very highly, fondly and highly of him. Who knew him?
Oh, a gent, an absolute gent.
Yeah, yeah. God, it's a funny old family, Doctor Who, isn't it? It really
is.
But just how Storm Warning is just has fed into your, you know, like I'm in a similar way in that Doctor Who's gradually taken over my life inch by inch, year by year, until suddenly I'm going, hey, nearly everything that's in my diary this week is to do with Doctor Who. How did that happen? Sometimes it's careful what you wish for. But other times, it's like, you know what? There's a lot worse things that could happen than something you really love being in life a lot. So it's, but McGann as well. I mean, last time I saw you, I don't think I saw you even to say hello, but I saw you on stage with McGann at Hooverville.
Yes.
And that was a lovely interview. So do you know McGann well?
To be honest, until...
I've been stalked him via fanzines for all these years.
Well, to be honest, until early last year, I think it was around April last year, I'd never met him. I'd been in touch with him by email just for, you know, a couple of wee bits here and there, just to get a wee line sometimes. But he was up in Scotland in a place called Bowness, which has a lovely old Art Deco cinema. Yeah. And every year they have a festival of silent films.
Yeah.
And Paul, of course, is a big fan of silent films. So
I learned that in your Q&A.
Oh, there we go.
But yeah.
Well, he'd originally planned to come up in 2020, but the event was cancelled because of COVID. And then when it was rearranged to go ahead last year, I was like, I'm going along to that. And because my position, I was still working in the media. I was on a magazine website, and I got in touch with the organisers, who I'd had a good relationship because I always plugged the Hip Fest anyway, as the silent film festival is known, and said, any chance I could get along and get a wee word with Paul? Completely for Scottish Field, honest, not at all for my own podcast. Oh no, not at all. Definitely not. And got the invite along, and I was last. They put me last to speak to him because they thought, well, that I might, because everybody got, all the journalists get 10 minutes, and I got him. I got him for about 15 and a half, which is rather good. And so I introduced myself to him and mentioned that I'm the guy who does Vortex for Big Finish. He's like, oh, yeah, you're the guy. And we had a great time chatting. And that was the first time I'd ever met him. But, you know, we'd had a good laugh, and I'd been in touch with him, you know, after that, sort of by email. And I know his son, Sonny, quite well, through Big Finish. And I let Sonny know that I'd be the guy who was going to be interviewing his dad. So obviously Sonny let Paul know ahead of Hooverville. And because I know that when I'm watching a convention panel, I don't always want to see people just talking about Doctor Who. I want to get to know a bit about them. I don't just want to know what you remember about, you know, what was it like, you know, shooting with guest star X and guest star Y.
Yeah.
And, you know, for these anecdotes, I'd quite like to know more about the person, what motivates them. Obviously, our passion's Doctor Who. What's their passion? Mm-hmm. And for Paul, silent cinema is one of the things that he is so into. And because I know that, particularly when I knew that he'd be talking about lost films, and obviously as Doctor Who fans, we can relate to that with missing episodes. Yeah. And I thought that'd be a good line to go down because it's something that people will get a hook onto and know about. But I mean, the thing is, because I followed Paul's career over the years, you know, I liked his work before he was in Doctor Who, and obviously enjoyed his Doctor Who work and what he's done since. So it was a really easygoing panel because I didn't actually need to do any research whatsoever. Everything that I knew was up here in my noggin. And I structured it all in my head. I mean, that's something that when I do an interview, obviously I'll prepare it beforehand, but when it's something I'm interested in, the way that my brain works is very bizarre, but I can memorize all these facts. Don't ask me useful stuff about what NMAP stands for, something to do with my work. And I'm knackered. Well, actually, I do know NMAP. There's quite a few that I don't know. But that's Nursing Midwives and Allied Health Professionals, because I work in the NHS now. And these things, I can structure them in my head. And obviously, if they say something really interesting, I will pick up and follow in that. It's just that, you know, from years of, nearly 30 years of being a full-time working journalist and just go with these questions and just improvise and go with the flow. Obviously, you've got the structure in your head of what you want, you know, the bullet points you want to hit. Because at that point, Ada's new costume had been announced that he was going to do the pictures and that. And so I asked him how that came around, all these sort of things. And it was just really nice to just have a chit-chat with him. And it felt, and he said afterwards, if it didn't feel like it was an interview, it felt like it was just, and for me, that's why a good convention panel should feel, that the audience are watching it was friends very, chatting.
Yeah, and it's brilliantly cozy. It was lovely. It was fireside chat, McGann. It was, I just love the fact he said, the way you lot are about Doctor Who, I am about silent films. That was his, because you lot are scary. You are scary. You are scary. Because he said that brilliant, was it there? It was, wasn't it? He said that brilliant thing about how Janet Fielding was on set with him.
Yes.
And because I never knew that either. So it's great to go to a panel because I actually hear like stuff I haven't heard before about lots of different things. It's quite unusual sometimes to be on.
I mean, that was the thing because there was new stuff to talk about. At that point, I hadn't heard him talk about doing The Power of the Doctor, which was new anecdotes for me as well. About his new outfit and all these things. So it was quite nice to have some sort of actually to chat about some new Doctor Who official TV content that he'd done. But it was fab. I mean, I'm really, really lucky in that, you know, I'm very friendly with India and Conrad Westmas, who was Keres. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Conrad is one of my dearest friends. And I was chatting with him the other night. Mm-hmm. And it was just a social chit chat. Just that was all. We have these catch-ups now and again, and you know, love him dearly. He's just one of my favourite people in the whole universe. and just good guy, really good guy, big Doctor Who fan, and just we always end up we really covered some really serious, heavy stuff about things that have been going on in both our lives, and then just you end up talking about giant clams from Genesis to the Daleks like 2 minutes later, and it's just like that's just the way it should be. That's just a proper friendship. I first met Conrad at Panopticon in 2003.
Oh, wow.
And because I said, oh, we need to do a chat for the fanzine at some point when you've got your stories out. And he wrote down his email address for me on a bit of paper. And I still have that bit of paper from 2003 in the Barrack Panopticon. And I've still got it in my wallet and carry it around. And I proved that to him quite recently because I found it. It's like, I still have it. Wow.
You like so your totems, don't you? But it's a lot
I
of us
do.
Are like that, though, aren't we?
And just like silly wee things that matter to me, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not really one for autographs and definitely not one for selfies. I don't have a picture with Paul, for example.
No.
But I just like talking to people, and that's sort of my thing. That's I know that people love their selfies that they can share, but I just like these moments, and you know, sort of they're important to me, and I quite enjoy that. I'm not one to share everything over social media that way. I just enjoy my own wee things, and obviously I like sharing things on social media with my podcasts and things like that.
Yeah,
but and just silliness. But I'm not really, you know, sort of.
Yeah,
it's not. It's just
I've
not
never quite got.
Maybe I'm too old, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just a bit older than you, aren't I? So I wasn't sure what age you are because you were ageless. I thought maybe you were a lot younger than me, but you said you're the same age as India.
Yes,
so 74.
Yeah, I'm 3 months older than Inda, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so I'm two years older than you, yeah. So, because looking at your choices, I was going, is he young, is that young that, because you've got the 11th hour as one of your choices.
Yes.
And I actually found myself going, was that like his first Doctor Who then? Was that, which now seems, I've just hugely flattered you as well. But
I'm totally flattered. Somebody recently thought I was
10 or 12 or something when 11th hour was on or something.
If you think that I'm 23, 24, I will take that, mate. You're so in my Christmas card list now.
Free on DVD with issue 6 of Warp Warp.
I stopped the car at last and let the fog close in around
me. Brand new animation by Mel.
I knew I was somewhere on Barnes Common. And I had a suspicious idea it was the most deserted part as well.
Adapted from the opening chapter of Doctor Who and the Daleks by David Whittaker.
I'm Barbara. Barbara Wright. Susan. Susan is in the road.
A meeting on the common.
Oh my goodness.
I say, you there. Are you trying to get us all killed? There's petrol everywhere!
Featuring Stephen Noonan.
What are you doing here?
As the First Doctor. Out now. Order online at warpwarp.co.uk.
So we might as well move on to the 11th hour then, because...
yeah.
So why the 11th hour? Because, you are a fan, like you say, a super fan. So the fact that your choices are across the audio and the visual... And the classic and the new, so when the show came back, what was that like?
That was exciting. I remember reading that Doctor Who was coming back. He was down visiting the in-laws in Salisbury, and they said, "Oh, Bill Nye's the Doctor." They must have been reading it on the Daily Express website because they wouldn't have bought the paper. Don't buy the Daily Express. Don't buy the Sun. Don't buy the Telegraph. Don't buy these papers. Especially don't buy the Daily Mail. that's my politics, nailed to the mast quite clearly. But yeah, I was down there and heard that Doctor Who was coming back and it was going to be Chris Eccleston. And I was like, wow. Because to me, he was the guy from 28 Days Later, the nasty military man. And that's what I associated with. And Shallow Grave, of course, with his interesting Scottish accent. it was my first thought was 28 Days Later, because I only watched that a couple of weeks earlier. But I was delighted, great casting, really excited that Doctor Who's coming back. And at the same time, you're thinking, this is great. And at the same time, you're also thinking, will it really work? And also there's that element of, I really like it sort of being my thing, because it wasn't really something, you know, the people I work with are like, Doctor Who, like, God, I remember that. I was like 9 when that went off the telly. And with one of, that was one of my colleagues. That was my number 2. And like, nah, loved the Star Wars, but he just, Doctor Who had passed him by. He just missed it because it was off when, in those years when he probably would have really taken a shine to it. And so, yeah, it was interesting and, you know, really excited and delighted that Chris Eccleston, gutted when he left. Delighted when David Tennant came on as he was somebody I'd actually interviewed. And my friend Sally had spoken to as well at the Paisley Daily Express. Mm-hmm. And my friend Craig McGill, he was working in the Scottish Daily Mirror. They used to have a Scottish edition of the Mirror many moons ago. Mm-hmm. And he phoned me up knowing that I was a big fan and said, this David Tennant guy, the one who's in Casanova, was like, yeah, I know his work, met him years ago. And you know that he's the next Doctor Who? What? Wow. So that was fantastic. I was one of the first people to know because Craig had got a really good tip off that they'd been keeping secret. And Craig was the one who actually broke the story that Eccleston was out and Tennant was coming in.
Oh, wow.
And, and it was a Scottish Daily Mirror exclusive and then picked up the following day when it was confirmed by me that Chris had gone. So, yeah, I was really excited. It was DT and got to meet him and interview him again a year later because they did a press launch for Series 2 in Glasgow and showed Tooth and Claw, which is wonderful. And there's loads of people along. Russell was along, Phil Collinson, Stephen Moffat, a whole load of behind-the-scenes people from the mill. And it was lovely. I got chatting to Russell and speaking and got his email address that day and sort of stays in touch. And it's been really handy for Vortex purposes because he's always been kind enough to reply every time I've messaged him. Because when he got the job back, I emailed him, and no doubt he'd have like 1,000 emails, but he took the time to reply and say, thanks very much, looking forward to it. It was just nice because I didn't expect him to do it. As you do when somebody you know gets a new job and you're excited for them and pleased. Yeah. And he replied and I was really taken by that. And that's speak volumes of the man. He's an absolute gent.
Yeah, I'm still yet to meet him. It's weird. Oh. So many people I know him, but I've not met him. I even hired his not that I knew at the time, but when his goddaughter's Australian and she came over to Manchester, and I didn't know this at the time, but we gave her her first job on stage literally within about 2 days of landing in the country, as we then found out, and then we found out she was like Russell T. Davis's goddaughter, and it was like, and that's why she came to Manchester. She's got the sort of Mancunian roots, but. Yeah.
That's fantastic
and connections, but but still yet to meet him, and but it's just brilliant that he's not just someone who works in telly and did Doctor Who. He's fan first, isn't he?
Absolutely.
It's like all of us that was what pushed him forward into it. That Doctor Who love that makes you end up doing the thing you're doing for a living.
It's amazing.
But so. So the 11th hour then, when obviously, I mean, it almost goes without saying because Eccleston, amazing, David Tennant years, amazing. But then the 11th hour was another make or break moment for the show, wasn't it?
Yep. It was, I mean, it could have gone so hideously wrong, but I think that, and I'll explain why this episode's important. It'll become apparent as I go on. I mean, I think it's a fantastic episode. It's very much a sort of a halfway house between what Russell had done and what Stephen was going to do. So the fact that you've got that sort of familiar kind of location you can relate to, although instead of being in the heart of London, obviously it's moved out into the countryside, into a village rather than being there with Ledworth, and introduces, of course, the wonderful Karen Gillan. Mm-hmm. And of course, we do get her younger version as well, and played by Caitlin. And I'll go into why it's become important now, because I didn't actually see this the night it was broadcast because I was actually working, and I came home and finished work at 10, so must have had this on about 10:30 and put it on and watched it and just thought, blown away. I still don't like the titles, but I enjoyed everything else. I'm not a big fan of that title sequence. Clouds? But instantly fell in love with it and just thought, yep, this guy's great. Matt just hits the ground running because I think he's a tougher job even than David. In that David, because Chris had been popular, David had become a megastar. And here you've got Matt, this unknown bloke with that weird sort of bony angular face, looks a bit like Constable Odo from DS9, has great hair. And the fact that he goes around most episodes in Tennant's costume, mark a genius. It just shows that it's the same guy. You recognize the look, you might not recognize the face. And I think that's just such a clever thing to do. And so you do have that sort of familiarity. And then, of course, when it gets to the end, when he gets to put on his own, the fact you've got all the faces of all the previous 10 doctors at that point popping up. And then Matt walks through it and just shows you, here you go. It's the same guy all the time. And I just think it was so cleverly done. But going back to the why it's important, I decided to watch it again in the Sunday morning. My wife was at work and my daughter was then, she just turned 4. And she was playing with her toys in just in the corner. And then, of course, little Amelia pops up, Caitlin Blackwood. And Katie starts watching because she's like, oh, there's a little girl in the telly. And she watched it and she was absolutely transfixed and absolutely loved it. And it was, I couldn't tell you the number of times Katie and I have watched the episode over the years together. And it's sort of that special sort of bond. And Katie is named after Katie Manning, I should point out.
Oh, wow.
And big Katie knows this. And the two Katies have met without there being any Blinovich related problems. So it's all good. And it was a lovely moment to do that because I knew big Katie and she was in Glasgow and I texted her to say, I'm going to be coming along and I'm going to bring wee Katie. And she knew that wee Katie was named after her. So she brought some things up specifically just for her, like a signed, like a first day cover, which came from 2006, the year my Katie was born. And gave her a whole load of stuff, signed a picture to Katie from Katie and rather than Katie Manning. And it's sort of that personal touch rather than, you know, Katie Manning, which she would normally sing for others. But it's lovely. And we've got that all framed and it's carefully protected. And it was just that special moment. And Katie then, so she began playing with my Doctor Who action figures from Character, which are another important thing in my life. I'm sort of involved sort of with the creation of some of the figures in a loose roundabout way sometimes. So Katie would play with the figures. She'd put them in her doll's house. She'd take them. She didn't want to have the dolls in there. It was all the action figures. So you're a TARDIS in either half of the loft. You have different doctors wandering around the house at different times. And of course, the worst part was that I had the limited edition Time Crash set with the two doctors in it. And I was away at Big Finish Day in 2013. So Katie would be 7. Just turned 7, and she came into this room that I'm in now. It was like a spare room then, and sat on the shelf with these figures in the pristine box. And she got scissors, and she very carefully, I mean, she opened it carefully. She couldn't have been any bit of, she'd used the scalpel, she couldn't have been more accurate. She's always been very crafty. And she opened them, was playing with them. And so when I phoned to say, how are you getting on? What are you up to? And she says, oh, I'm playing with the Doctor Who figures. Like, oh, that's good. Which ones today? And she told me, and then I got those ones off your shelf and I've opened them and I'm playing with them now and they're in the house. So yeah, I had to, yeah, I was fine. I was fine once I got through the therapy. But yeah, my collector's items suddenly not so collectible, but she was happy. And to be honest, that's more important to me than anything else. So
it is.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But no, that's what the 11th hour is, a very sort of emotive sort of personal choice, because I know that one day when I'm gone, Katie will watch that and she'll remember me. And the Five Doctors is my comfort blanket story, but I didn't select that because it sort of, that makes me think of my mum and dad who are both gone. And the day that they both passed away, on separate days, I should say, the Five Doctors is a story that I watched and that just sort of brought me a bit of happiness and on some dark days. Mm-hmm. But because the Five Doctors has got some sadness to it, that's why it's not in my selection.
Yeah. Today. Yeah.
Whereas the ones that I've picked are ones that are that make me smile, make me happy.
And, yeah.
But actually, the other day, I found the copy of the 11th Hour that came with a newspaper, if it can be called a newspaper, back in the day, and it had the End of Time Parts 1 and 2 and the 11th Hour. And one of my wife's friends works in W.H. Smith, so I didn't have to buy the disgusting newspaper, but there were she gave me 3 copies of these leftover discs, so Katie now has one. And I'm pretty sure that I heard it on in the background the other night. I didn't go in and disturb her, but because she'd probably have denied and gone, not watching it, it's only on because it's in the background.
I was going to say, has she kept up with the Doctor Who?
No.
No.
She carried on watching. She loves Matt. She'll watch Matt Smith in anything. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loves him. Although she's not watched House of the Dragon.
I was about to say.
She'd probably find that a bit embarrassing because
she sees his bum. You see his bum quite a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to see.
You don't see the Doctor doing that.
No, that's not what he does. It's not the Doctor. And she's sort of drifted away from it. I mean, she likes Capaldi. She thinks Peter Capaldi's great. Mm-hmm. But she didn't take to Jodie in the slightest. And hasn't watched anything since. Although that said, we actually watched a bit of the animated 10th Planet as we record today. It's the day when everything's gone live on iPlayer, and I thought, I quite fancy watching that when I have my tea tonight. So I just thought, put on episode 4, and she was watching that and asking questions like, why is it not a video? And it's like, well, they wiped the original tapes a long time ago and junked all the copies. So she's like, oh, that's really sad.
Yeah.
And so she learned about missing episodes today. There you go. There's something new.
Yeah, and I've got three boys, and the two, 16, 14, and they associate Doctor Who with me, but don't seek it out themselves anymore. But they will associate with me. And my 8-year-old is properly obsessed with it and was really excited to suddenly see the iPlayer today, November the 1st.
Yes.
Just go. It's weird because he's seen exactly that page on ITVX before. But seeing it on the BBC iPlayer, where he's used to go.
It should be.
Yeah, yeah. But he's used to he's used to going on himself and putting on Horrible Histories or whatever. And I'm hoping that because the RTD2 era is coming, that Doctor Who is going to become huge again. Because at the moment, he's the only person in his entire school that knows what Doctor Who is, let alone watches it. Like, even some teachers don't know what it is. So we've had that. Doctors 1 to 4 were when Doctor Who was huge, from Dalek Mania to Tom Baker. Yeah. And then nothing wrong with those eras, 5, 6, 7. But that's when it became, I was the only person I knew really who liked Doctor Who for those years. And I'm sure you maybe were the same, being the same generation. And it's almost like New Who has now done that thing. We've had Eccleston and Tennant, and then it dipped, not in quality or anything, but it just dipped in popularity because the general public weren't doing it in the same way for whatever reason.
It's history repeating itself because if you take Tom and Tennant, two hugely popular doctors with the general public, in comes their successor, a younger actor, and they're very good. You know, people take a shine to them quickly. They, they love them. They have a big anniversary special, which and there's big events. People go along, crowds there, people love it.
Mm.
And then their last year sort of interest begins to wane a bit after that. And then in comes a slightly older, slightly grumpier doctor, and the public take a while to warm to them. And then by the time they're gone, the person who's come in to replace them is they're not that highly regarded by the public, unfortunately.
Mm.
And it's just history repeating itself. But no, here we totally go. We've got this. Hope RTD2 isn't a TV movie and then back for a bang and then is gone. One night only.
I'm sure it won't be.
We trust.
I mean, I was fairly confident in 2005, although I was scared. But because I already knew of Russell's work with, the amazing Queer as Folk and Bob and Rose and so many things, even back then, a body of work that most TV writers would kill for. And now we've had It's a Sin. And, we've had some of the best British...
British scandals.
I love that. But It's a Sin was the one for me. Just like, oh, God, I just cried my eyes out.
Yep.
Like, I felt actually dehydrated watching that. My wife came home and thought there'd been a tragedy in the family. And then the next day I watched it all again, but with my wife, and both of us were like just sobbing on the sofa. Just such an amazing, hard watch, but RTD is absolute best, I would say. Yes.
You're listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Comics, publisher of creator-owned comics based on characters and stories set in the Doctor Who universe. For more on Cutaway, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter @cutawayuniverse.
But we've got the 11th hour, and then you've got another 11th. You really do like the 11th Doctor, because you've got an 11th Doctor novel as one of your choices. Touched by an Angel by the wonderful Johnny Morris.
For me, it's...
yeah,
not the other one.
Not the Animal Magic, yeah. You know.
No, for me, it was important just to sort of share the love for the expanded media. And, I mean, I love the new adventures. I could very easily have, you know, picked half a dozen new adventures to go in here, or missing adventures, BBC books to drop in there, and particularly EDAs, as I think that's an era that is very easy to overlook and forget, particularly the EDAs, given that your Big Finish began after the EDAs had started in 97, starting on the 7th of June 1997. Told you I'm good with dates. And it's a curse and a blessing at times, I tell you. Yeah. A bit like immortality, but I'm not immortal. Young as I may look, but I'm not immortal. It was important to get a book in there because I think sometimes it's easy to forget these. And this one, Touched by an Angel by Jonathan Morris, is, to me, it's the greatest original Doctor Who novel ever written. I love Human Nature, love Just War, love The Dying Days. But for me, this one it's just a far more human story. I mean, it's set in the 90s, and it's a love story about a young man whose wife is killed, and he's sent back in time by weeping angels, and he has the chance to try and, you know, spend more time with her and such like.
I'm not explaining premise. It. That's because I've not read this one. It's but I'm this, doing this podcast costs me money, because I'm always, nearly every single time I've watched something, either in preparation or afterwards. But yeah, I mean, God, that's a brilliant premise. That really is.
But what really made this one work for me is that because the guy is sent back from, I think it's Mark, he's sent back from the present day back to the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that's going on here is related. I was a student at this time this book set.
Yeah.
So everything that's in there, I'm relating to it, you know, sort of like the music that's there. Just, you know, nights out. Obviously, I was a student in Edinburgh, not where this is set, but it's still that wonderful, just that joyous feeling of being in the 90s, being young, free, single, and, you know, out partying a lot, drinking a lot, doing lots of other things a lot, and just having an amazing time. And this book absolutely encapsulates that. And then you throw into it the Doctor, Amy, and Rory. And there's some brilliant stuff in it. It's very, very, very amusing. We released an episode looking at it where myself and my friend Dave Steele, we've been featuring a different Doctor Who novel every day in the first 14 days of November. And then we featured a few other ones later on. And we spoke with Johnny about this book and, you know, the influences on it, you know, what he put into it, and the fact there's loss in there, and Johnny channeled a tragic loss in his family and put that into the book. And it is just, it'll rip your heart out. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry. I almost went into Wayne's World there and said it'll make you hurl, but it won't. unless you're laughing so much at some of the bits. There's great bits like Rory chases a pickpocket, and because he's taken a wallet that's got something in it, this pickpocket, Rory chases him, and Rory sort of eventually gets the wallet after knocking the guy over, and he's exhausted, and the Doctor just wanders up and says, "Oh, you've got the wrong wallet." Rory looks at him, and the Doctor says, "Ah, only joking." And it just it's just, you can still hear Matt Smith saying it. It's perfect. It's a perfect encapsulation of the Matt Smith era. It's the best Stephen Moffat story that Stephen Moffat never wrote. In fact, dare I say, it might even be better than some of the Stephen Moffat timey-wimey stuff. Don't tell him I said that.
No.
Scottish Club. I don't want to break the Scottish Club, because we have a meeting every Thursday, all the Scottish Doctor Who people. Shooty and Sylvester are a bit busy at the moment. They've not been popping by too often lately. But yeah, it's just an amazing book, an amazing read. It was given a reprint as part of the Monster Collection, I think it was 2015. And there's a talking book version of it as well. It's so worth tracking down. It's one that will rip your heart out. As I said, it'll make you laugh. And it's just, for me, the perfect Doctor Who book. And it's one that
I am so...
It could have been sort of almost my 90s in a lot of ways.
Out now from Cutaway Comics, part 2 of the Gods and Monsters saga.
And so I am banished.
Sutek.
Robbed of physical form. Set adrift in the black void between galaxies. Not for the first time. For I am Sutek. Destroyer, sworn enemy of all creation. And creation has many defenders. But this defeat feels different. Something new gnaws at what remains of my diminished soul. Not merely defeat, but something I dare not even name.
Sutek, Sutek, hear me.
Next, this.
Yes, O brother husband. Let my voice guide you back to me and home to Neteketet.
The land of the dead. And yet, for me, it means life. A reprieve. And for the first time in millennia, a body.
In this place, you will always have form, or the appearance of form. But this you know. I have been granted permission to save you, but not restore you.
You always were weak, sister wife. Sentimental. The others would have let me die.
And they would have been justified in doing so. You were brought into this universe to bring chaos and suffering and death, but as part of the greater whole, you played a role in the balance of all things. And then, brother, husband, you forgot your place.
I declared war on all life.
You went insane. Even I, my love, wished death upon you. Only now...
You need my insanity.
Yes.
Who do you want me to kill?
An animated version of this trailer, starring Gabriel Wolf as Sutek and Zoe Iqbal as Nephthys, is one of the features on the VAM disc that comes free with the comic, only when you purchase direct from us at cutawaycomics.co.uk.
But going back in time to so with a similar age, so your next choice is your one classic Who choice, which is City yes. of Death. And it's almost redundant to say why City of Death, because obviously it's brilliant. But
yes.
But why City of Death rather than all the other brilliant Tom Bakers
yep. or well, I know that
or Patrick Troughton.
I know that from obviously listening to your previous episodes, you normally ask people for their first Doctor Who memory. City mm-hmm. of Death isn't mine. And my earliest one, I think, there's one that I think, and there's one that I know. I think Horrifying Rock might be my first, because mm-hmm. I remember a green alien talking about humans. I remember asking my mum, what are humans? in our old living room, and my mum saying, well, that's, we're humans, we're people. All right, okay. My first definite memory is the very last scene of The Invasion of Time when the Doctor gets K9 Mark II in the box, and it was the console room he did that. In my mind, my four-year-old mind, it was a K9 storeroom where he had more K9s, that the room was full of cardboard boxes with more K9s. God, you could make a fortune with them in Amazon, couldn't you? Yeah. Ship them out. And,
End of Raiders of Lost Ark with K9.
Yes.
As far as the eye could see.
Yeah, even I'm just looking over to my left there. I've got the K9 from the Aussie TV series. I've only watched the first episode of that. I haven't watched any more. I really should.
I haven't watched any.
But No, it's. I gather I'm not missing out too much from. I do have all the episodes in DVD, but I've never just got around to watch them. I will want maybe one day when I'm sort of got nothing to do.
When you've run out of when all the other Doctor Who has run out.
Yes, that's it. When it's all gone. Yeah. So, yeah, but no, I enjoyed Invasion of Time, so where I became a regular viewer. I remember you're watching Key to Time and particularly liking Romana, and I loved her outfit in Androids of Tara. And yeah. I particularly remember the scene of her being restrained and with Madame Lamet down boy. But yeah, that's also different connotations now. But yeah, I loved that and watching that. And then Destiny of the Daleks, liked that, really liked that. And then along came City of Death. And even at the age of 5, I knew that that was something special. I was laughing at it.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think just it's absolute Tom at the peak of his powers. With Lala Ward, you've got my favorite TV companion there. And they're just so good together. It's just people, you can tell they're in love. And it's wonderful because of that. They're having fun.
They're in love and they're acting in Paris.
Yeah.
They're getting paid to run around Paris.
Yep. And in fact, that was one of my favourite things was in 2013 when I was doing the Mirrors bookazine, and I was pretty much given full access to Doctor Who archives that they had photographically, and so it was this like they gave me this list of like dates and files, and one was it was in Paris and said get those, I want them all scanned up, and so they did like preview proofs for me, and I could only pick about 4 or something to go in the bookazine. And I've found all these wonderful shows. I have downloaded them all and kept them and for myself. And I've shared them on Twitter several times. But
is that legal? Can that be in the podcast?
Yes, it can.
It can. You don't want to do an age because
I did attribute them. and I always encourage people to buy the Mirrors bookazine, which I think you can still get online. There's a new newspaper this year, which I haven't bought yet, actually. Must buy that. It'll be interesting to see how many of the picks that I found are in there. It's just such a great story. It's the fun of it. And to me, it's what Doctor Who should be. I know that a lot of people had problems with it. My friend Gary Russell is not a fan of season 17 at all. But for me, that's what really got me hooked because it wasn't your poor-faced sci-fi. It was your Star Trek and stuff like that, which never particularly interested me. Mm-hmm. Only Deep Space Nine for me. But I was never a fan of Star Trek, really. I'd watch it, but I wouldn't call myself a fan. And but here you just had fun. You'd a silly monster, which is a great concept. I mean, imagine what they could do now to CGI a Jaggeroth. Brilliant. And the spaceship design, just everything about it just works for me. And it's the music. It's just beautiful. It's romantic. It's funny. It's fast-paced. It's just the wit of it. And yeah, it's just, for me, I can see why Russell recommended it to Julie Gardner is watch it. This is what we want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of getting the tone right, throw in a bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah,
sort
of
tone as well and feel to it and for relationships. And that's, it's perfect. It's hard to find something new to say about City of Death all these years later.
Well, no. I mean, it's, did you watch it with your folks? I mean,
yes.
I think you did. You were young, weren't you?
Yes, five. And
yeah, because my memory of it is that quite often Doctor Who was on, but they weren't necessarily engaged by it. But when they were, it seemed extra special, and they were by City of Death. They were chortling away at it and watching it and entertained by it. And that sort of tells you that it wasn't just kids watching it because it was Doctor Who. It worked on every level, which when Doctor Who's at its best, it's for the entire family.
Exactly. And you look at the cast.
Yeah.
I mean, Catherine Schell, brilliant, sexy, sultry. I mean, how often do you get somebody who's flirty and sexy in Doctor Who at that point? Never. And Catherine Schell's there. And just an amazing performance from Scaroth and from Julian Glover. And you can see, I mean, I think this is a guy who was menacing Tom Baker 1 year and menacing James Bond the next.
Mm-hmm.
For your eyes only, just think that's the caliber of guest star that they got, and it shows, and it's just brilliant. It really is.
No, it really is. It's one of my favorites. If I ever do this myself, it possibly will be on the five. It is brilliant. It really is. Peak.
Yep.
Peak. All the stars were right. And it's so, I mean, and the fact that it's, yeah, like you said about Russell, I think that's why the Russell era, he understands TV on every level, publicity, populism without it pandering. Yep.
Something's coming. A threat like no other. It will take a team of the most unlikely warriors in creation to defeat it. The universe is depending on you.
Gods and Monsters, Issue 1, Fausti, written by Stephen Gallagher with art by Martin Geraghty. Issue 2, Sutekh, written by Ian Winterton with art by Adrian Salmon. And Issue 3, Omega, El Trala by Mark Griffiths with art from the legendary John Ridgway. An epic clash of good and evil that threatens to rip apart time and space.
But your final choice is from 10 years ago when that amazing time, which was the 50th. It was such an amazing secret for me. I managed to not hear it was happening. Maybe you're slightly better, more plugged in than I am. A lot more, I would imagine. But I didn't know Tom was coming back, and I didn't know McGann was coming. So, and I did deliberately disengage from a lot of the more spoilery fans on the internet, because I really hate spoilers. I want to watch in sort of as much ignorance as possible, because that's how it was intended to be digested. But yeah, so Night of the Doctor brings us back to McGann as well. So, I mean, did you know before it was coming on what was coming?
Yes, I did.
Yes.
I'm lucky that I know an awful lot of people sort of in Doctor Who, sort of I know people in television, and yeah, I knew that he was coming back and I was excited. I knew there was a new costume, and I didn't know exactly, and I knew it was going to lead into the regeneration into the War Doctor, but then known as the Other Doctor. Mm-hmm. And I think the War Doctor designation was decided on quite late in the day. Mm-hmm. Because I think in, you look at the character options figure, it's the Other Doctor, the Other Doctor's sonic screwdriver, mm-hmm. all these things, that was the branding on those. I think that was where it was built up for most people. Mm. But yeah, I knew it was coming, but it was just so exciting because I knew that it dropped, and I was at work in the newspaper office, and there was a couple of other Doctor Who fans in the same office. One of my colleagues on the Rutherglen Reformer, hometown newspaper of Andrew Smith, writer of Full Circle, and Bob, who was the editor of the Hamilton.
The year before, yeah.
Yeah, good guy. And, and Bob Mitchell was the editor of the Hamilton Advertiser, so I knew what it was and said, oh, we've got a 50th anniversary preview thing. Come on round, guys. We watched it, so put it on my monitor and press play. And so, obviously, we've got Cass and the crashing spaceship. And I just knew what was coming, but they didn't. And then as soon as that voice goes out, I'm a doctor. And they were just like, oh, my God. And it was just smiles all the way. And just watching it, it was just like, oh, my God, this is amazing. I'm watching it again. I think I watched it 3 times at work that morning. And then another once in the afternoon. And then several times again that evening. You can see why I got over 5 million views in the first,
I think I just watched it 3 times in a row, back to back.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I can get on with my day now.
But it's amazing just the world building that it does in such a short space of time. Yeah. Not one line is wasted in there.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that we learn that the Time Lords have become as bad as the Daleks in the eyes of the lesser races.
Yeah.
And that was inverted commas there, listeners.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, back we learn, you know, we get to see the Sisterhood and Karn, the fact that things have got so desperate that they want the Doctor to become a warrior, and you know, he's the way that he's convinced and broken from his beliefs in such a short space of time, that he turns from his I'll never do it to okay, where do I sign up? And it's quite, it's just so powerful. It's beautifully done. An amazing performance from Paul McGann. And it's the fact that that on its own has given so much creativity to Big Finish writers, you know, with the likes of the Time War series, the Eighth Doctor Time War, setting up things with War Doctor Begins, and just amazing. But my the other thing that I really like about it is, of course, the Big Finish companions being made canonical,
yeah,
which was fantastic. And I remember texting Conrad and saying, "You're canonical." And that was all I put. And he replied saying, "What are you talking about?" And just said, "Watch, go on the BBC website, watch this." And, you know, he was, and I think it was, you know, about 8 minutes later after he'd watched it, it was like, "Oh my God, can't believe it." And then he texted India as well. And just so lovely, just sort of, and it's the fact that it's just the world building, and it just proves that the Eighth Doctor wasn't a one-off. And the fact that Stephen brought him back for that short scene, and it's just wonderful. And it's so important to me because it sort of just confirmed my love of the Eighth Doctor, and just, it was just so much fun. And well, maybe it wasn't quite so much fun for the Doctor given that he dies. But yeah, and just that, I mean, the reuse of the music in it is perfect. I've actually got a soundtrack version of that made up, all the, you know, 7 odd minutes of it. So I can just listen to it. And if I want to just listen to the lines, because I know it off by heart, I'm sure we all do, the way that I know the Five Doctors off by heart and pretty much most of Remembrance. And there I even say Time and the Rani. So
I don't know that off by heart.
Rah, rah, raid, raid, radiation wave meters, what we came for, etc.
Night of the Doctor. The whole 50th was just such a special, it was crazy. It was crazy how, I mean, I suppose this is where it's not quite after David Tennant, things went a bit quiet. I suppose it is like your analogy to the Five Doctors, but things were so huge. Like it was at cinemas. I mean, did you watch Day of the Doctor at the cinema?
Oh yeah, got my 3D glasses and everything.
Right, my eyes out. I mean, I was just saying this to Emma earlier on, but yeah, cried because I didn't know Tom was coming back, and I'd forgotten he was coming back. I just was swept away by the story, so I forgot it was even a possibility. So it totally gut punched me. It's perfect, perfect way to view it, because everyone afterwards was like, "Oh yeah, obviously we knew Tom Baker was coming back." All the other fans I knew, I was like, "Well, I'm bloody glad no one told me, because I would have been so cross."
Yeah, I was just disappointed they didn't show Knight before it, because I thought that'd been a really nice intro. I was hoping it would be, but to be. But we get all the wonderful stuff with Dan Starkey and some Tarans and David and Matt with the 3D glasses stuff, and
that was
really good fun. But I just wish they'd shown Knight before it as well, because that would have just been brilliant.
If they hadn't put it on the, iPlayer and.
It'd have made that a longer running time as well.
Yeah.
You should have shown it anyway.
It's mad. The whole thing was just such a crazy time. I think because the 50th went so well, part of me wonders if Russell's motivation, other than, just he loves Doctor Who, is he gets to do the 60th, and because maybe he was slightly jealous of the 50th coming around on someone else's watch, because it was so huge and so great, and it must have been amazing, stressful and everything, but amazing to be like at the center of that storm for Moffat and his team.
Stephen was pretty drained by it, given that was pretty much written at the last minute, really, because he wasn't sure who he'd got, and then thankfully
he got
Matt contracted and David contracted, and
obviously
they got the War Doctor, even if we didn't get Chris, but it was a great time. I just remember being very happy a lot. I was knackered because I'd written the Mirrors magazine in, I think it was about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'd also done a magazine for the Scottish Daily Record that I'd Doctor Who put out, a 16-page newspaper supplement, which, I finished work at 5, get in the door about 6, see the family for about an hour, and then at 7 o'clock, get the computer out, and just working, doing interviews, you know, getting hold of Wendy Padbury, and Nicola Bryan, whoever, just people talking about the photo shoots. So again, it was something different, so you're not getting the same old anecdotes. So what do you remember about this photo shoot? And you know, Wendy saying, "Oh gosh, remember the trouble getting the fire lit?"
Yeah.
She was doing her Fuel in Space photo call, and Nicola talking about how the photographers were trying to get her to, you know, Colin to lift her up higher so they could see up her skirt, and just that disgusting sort of behaviour, typical tabloids. And but she was, you know, just getting these different anecdotes that you don't normally get, to sort of sent them the photos so they could see what they were talking about and what they remembered about it. It was just something a little different, and it made it more fun for me as well.
Yeah, oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, no, it's a special time. And anyway, Kenny, it's been an absolute pleasure talking
to you.
Thank you.
I've had a real blast.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, Doctor Who, it's everywhere. I went and did my I'm going to edit this out, but anyway, I'll say goodbye and then we'll have that.
I was going to make a quick bunker reference before we go.
Oh, go on, make a quick bunker reference.
Well, I'm just grateful that you've given me the chance to sort of survive the fallout. Well, in this bunker, Khaled's and Thal's around everywhere. I'm sure that they'll hopefully go past this bunker. And I've got my supplies here. I've got a nice big bottle of juice that will probably last me another half an hour. And I've even got, because I'm, what's the ultimate thing you need if you're a Scottish Doctor Who fan?
Well, Iron Brew or Buckfast.
Iron Brew what? What am I holding up here?
Jelly Babies. Oh, wow.
Iron Brew flavored Jelly Babies.
Oh, my yes. God. Were they developed especially for David Tennant?
They must have been. They must have been. I'll have to, next time I see a Scottish Doctor, I have to give him a bag of those. So.
Yeah,
my pal Dave bumped into PCAP in the street. And just, the annoying thing is literally in the spot where he met him is in view, full view of my office. And every time I'm in the office, I go to the spot and look down to see if Peter's walking by. Haven't seen him yet. I've been in this job 18 months, so he'll have to have gone by there at some point.
Oh, my God. You should just set up a webcam.
Capaldi can.
Then you could sort of watch it while you're still working. Just in case he goes by. Yeah, I've never.
But isn't that all creepy and stalkerish? I would never consider doing that. Anyway, I'll have to move my desk next week when I'm in and not do that.
Brilliant, Kenny. Brilliant. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to have you on. And this is the bit where we just fade out and talk. But yeah, I was just there.
You have been listening to The Bunker from Cutaway Universe. Your host has been Ian Winterton. Produced by James Stevenson of Bamalan Productions. Gods and Monsters advert voiced by Brian Blessed. All music by Paul Phillips. For more on Cutaway and to buy online, visit cutawaycomics.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at Cutaway Universe.